Mr. Herbie Hancock. Herbie Hancock, y'all.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Checkout, a podcast. You know where to get it. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. Produced at WBGO 88.3 FM, our homepage where we archive all of our shows. Check out jazz.org. Are you checking out some jazz? Right now, you're listening to the one and only Herbie Hancock from a concert we captured at Brooklyn's Prospect Park in the summer of 2016. On today's show, we'll talk to the legendary pianist about his forthcoming recording project, one that will apparently feature some of the hottest names in jazz today: Thundercat, Flying Lotus, Terrace Martin, and others. As you may know, these are the musicians that have come to define LA's current bustling jazz scene. And although there isn't a record date yet confirmed for this project, the pianist is making a point of playing with many of these artists in concert. In fact, Herbie is confirmed to perform a special set with the brilliant singer and electric bassist Thundercat this weekend at the Newport Jazz Festival. I should also note, Herbie plays the Beacon Theater in New York City tonight. So back in 2016, I spoke to the pianist from his Southern California home, where the pianist resides today. And we cover a lot of different topics in this show. A lesson he learned from playing with Miles Davis in the 60s, his infatuation with NASA's space program, and just his dedication to music education in general. It's really inspiring. So stick with us during this special hour with Herbie Hancock, and thanks for checking in. Thank you. I'm Simon Rentner for The Checkout. What you're hearing right now is one of Herbie Hancock's most recent performances, actually on Flying Lotus's recording, You're Dead, Tesla. And joining us right now might be the Tesla of jazz himself. It is such a great honor to welcome you to The Checkout in WBGO, Herbie Hancock.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here on the wave.
Well, I recently spoke to Stephen Ellison in L.A., your stomping grounds right now, about you. I just wanted to play you that clip right now.
It was really good that I did those with him first because it just gave me the confidence to pursue the ideas once he told me that he was so into it. You know, he was getting it. He was like, oh, yeah, it's going to be like, yes, okay, you got it? You got it? All right, I'm keep going. You know, it was a good support. You know, having my grandpa tell me that it was all good, you know.
That's in reference to You're Dead, your appearance on Tesla. Hearing him say that and talk about you brought me back to the opening passage of your memoir, Possibilities, Herbie, where you were in Sweden with the Miles Davis Quintet in the mid-60s, where you played the wrong notes. But Miles Davis gave you a nod of confidence nevertheless.
That was an amazing event. I'll never forget that because that was the hottest night of the whole European tour. And the band was smoking and we had the audience in the palm of our hands. And at the peak of the evening, I played this chord that was really completely wrong, right? And Miles just took a breath and then he played some notes and it made my chord right. It made it fit into the flow of things. And it took me many years to figure out that what had actually happened. And the truth of the matter is I realized finally that Miles didn't judge my chord. Like, no judgment whatsoever. He just heard it as something that happened, and then he dealt with it and found these notes that worked. And that's a very important lesson that I've learned and applied not only to music, but I apply it to life.
But it seems like you're applying it with this even Flying Lotus session where you guys are on the edge, right?
Oh, yeah. I had no idea actually what we were doing at the time. When I first went over to his house to record something, I didn't have any preconceived idea. And I know that a lot of things have changed, of course, since the early days of recording, but the way I'd been used to recording in a recording studio and preparing everything in advance, I knew, no, things have changed a lot with young people since then. And so I wanted to find out how he records. And I learned a lot, actually, working with Steve Ellison and Flying Lotus. It was funny because I heard this drum track that he just put up. He didn't say anything. He just started playing it from his computer. And then he said, oh, you think you might be able to put something on from maybe the Fender Rhodes? I said, sure. So I started looking for something to do that related to what essentially sounded like a drum solo. And I found some phrases that kind of worked. And he put the whole thing on a loop. But after a few minutes, I began to notice that something I played was on a loop. And I just kept going and coming up with some other ideas, and he was recording them, and then certain things he would kind of snatch to put in that loop, and then later on he sliced and diced it and put it all together and made it part of the track that's called Tesla. Oh, the car that I drove up to his house is a Tesla.
He has a beautiful house, gorgeous, in the canyon of L.A.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you've been to his, is that where you interviewed him?
Yeah, that's where I interviewed him, yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah, he does. He has a great house, yeah. We'll be right back.
We're speaking with Herbie Hancock. He's performing a new project with James Genius, Trevor Lawrence Jr., Lena Loeke, Terrace Martin, Herbie Hancock, the band. We're going to be talking about that new project. In fact, why don't we just get straight to it? I mean, really, the new ingredient, I just had him on my show, was Terrace Martin, the saxophonist.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Terrace and I have been working together almost every day on different things for the record.
And when's this record coming out?
I don't know. I'm not putting a time limit on it. It's going to come out when it's ready.
So Terrace Martin agreed that every time you do drop a new project, it is kind of an event, at least in the jazz music community. Everybody perks up and wants to listen to it right away. So what kinds of things are you messing around with, technologically speaking? I mean, Flying Lotus also said that you're incessantly curious about what's going on today. So what are you doing new with this project?
Well, I'm working with a lot of young people. Many of them are friends of Flying Lotus and Terrace Martin, you know, like Thundercat, the bassist. And also Robert Glasper.
And who's carrying on your vocoder tradition, might I add? I mean, he's, or Casey Benjamin,
well,
I should say.
Terrace plays not only alto saxophone, he also plays keyboards, and he also works with the vocoder. He also plays drums, but I'm not sure if he's going to play drums on the record. There's Trevor Lawrence is one of the drummers that I've been working with on this record. Vinny Colaiuta is another one.
Jamiah Williams.
Yeah, young.
The drummer.
Yep. He's also been working on some of the tracks.
And all of these guys are just a joy to be around.
Yeah, but,
I mean.
But I also have from England, Jacob Collier. He came over.
He was recently in our studio. He played the C3 organ for the very first time.
He did.
Yeah.
What a great talent that guy is. Amazing, you know.
So he has invented this software at MIT where he's able to make 6 or 12 part harmony in real time. Are you messing with that as well?
He brought it over and he was doing that when he was here, as well as playing keyboards. And we haven't finalized anything, but that's a prototype that he's still working on. And it's a lot of fun. There are a lot of people from different cultures, from different parts of the world, that will be involved with this record.
Give me some names.
Lionel Loeke is one. We're just not ready for what he has to offer yet. There's a guy named Dafer Moussef that I've reaching out to, who plays the oud and play and sings. That I spoke to actually a year and a half ago about this, and I haven't really spoke to him since. So I'm looking to put him on the record. Zakir Hussain, the amazing
tabla
master, right from India, he agreed to be on the record. Oh, I should also say Wayne Shorter agreed to be on the record. I'm reaching out to make this record have a sense of bringing the culture of the world together, because those are the times that we live in today. That really is the 21st century and beyond.
A culture of inclusiveness, as Henry Threadgill recently said to me.
Absolutely. That's what it's about. Let's bring us all together, you know, to fight some of the really serious battles that we have that go beyond the fighting of wars and killing each other, but reaches out into really solving some of the global climate problems that can only be solved if humanity is together as one unit, fighting for the survival of life on a planet of Earth.
In this Flying Lotus interview, he told me that you were sending music ideas to different planets into space. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, he's talking about the Juno project. It's something I'm doing with NASA and Jet Propulsion Lab, you know, JPL. I don't know if you heard about, but I'm sure many of your listeners have heard about the spacecraft that was sent from here to the planet Jupiter that is now orbiting Jupiter. And it's going to make 33 orbits, and then it's going to make a third of an orbit as it crashes into the planet. But meanwhile, it's sending information in the form of tones back to the Earth.
Wow.
And a lot of what it is involved has to do with overtones. In the overtone series, with a lot of their scientific data. And so the reference of 33 and a third orbits, you know, revolutions, like
vinyl.
33 and a third RPM, yeah. Vinyl records, right. And even the shape of the Juno spacecraft, it's got the solar paneling, and it almost looks like one of the panels almost looks like the arm of a record player. So there's so many references to music with the tones and the overtones that they thought, in order to draw more attention to the fantastic work that's being done in space technology. There's a lot of interest in the not just the planets, but in the galaxy and the universe. They realize as a musical component that relates directly with all of these things. And so they came to me with an idea of putting some things together with various artists to kind of promote this project, and particularly for young people, you know, stimulate interest in
space. And can we hear this? Is this out?
No. It's something that's going to be ongoing, and they're working with Apple on the majority of this project. And so I don't know all of the details, because I'm just one of the people involved, but it's pretty much under NASA and Apple's wing. So I imagine that Apple Music is very much involved. And I was there for the actual event where the spacecraft finally went into orbit, where it had to slow down at exactly the right time. And when it had to do what it does in order to go into orbit around Jupiter, into the orbit they wanted. I mean, all of those things were done to a T. They missed one thing by 0.7 seconds. Everything else was absolutely on point. And that 0.7 seconds was negligible. So it was a complete success. You know, they were even shocked that it would be so successful.
Well,
You just heard Herbie Hancock performing at Brooklyn's Prospect Park in 2016, August 11th, to be specific. Terrace Martin, James Genus, Trevor Lawrence Jr., and Lena Luecke joining Herbie Hancock. Now back to our conversation. We're talking about space and music. Well, he is in a spacecraft in the album Thrust. Actual proof, has an amazing story as well in your memoir, Possibilities, that was released in 2014 with the bassist Paul Jackson.
What was funny about Paul is that we had been playing the piece on tour. You know, when we're kind of putting it together primarily on tour. And because Headhunters was such a big record at that time, and I was playing for not just the typical jazz audience, but I had a huge pop audience in this new, what was new then, this fusion style of mixing jazz elements and popular elements, in this case, kind of R&B, funkish kind of thing that we were doing. That was a new thing. But because we were playing to an audience that is used to hearing things, especially if it's from a record, like the things from the Headhunters record, they want to hear the bass line from the Headhunters record. But Paul Jackson originally was an acoustic jazz bass player. And he's not, and his thing is to always play different bass lines. But when he picked up the electric bass, he immediately played the style that you hear from Paul Jackson, but it's a style that's constantly changing. I mean, it's an approach of constantly using change and creativity of being in the moment. So I had to tell Paul, look, got to play the same bass line. So finally, he found the bass line that he wanted for the tune, Actual Proof, and although at the time we didn't have I'm not sure we had a title, but anyway, when we finally got back to record it, and I counted off the tune, the tape recorder is rolling, because that was back in the day when we recorded on tape, and it starts off with the bass. He played a completely different bass line. and it didn't work with the clavinet pattern that I had figured out, because the clavinet pattern worked with the old bass line. And I said, Paul, I've been trying to convince you to play the same bass line. He apologized and said, okay, I'll go back to the bass line, the original bass line I've been playing on tour. And I said, well, wait a minute, hold on. I said, that bass line that you're playing now is so bad, it's incredible. I said, but I have a question. I want you to do that bass line, but you have to tell me, where's the first beat? I couldn't figure it out because it was a pretty complex line rhythmically. When he told me where one was, the first beat, I said, no way, no way. Anyway, finally I got used to it, found another, created a different clavinet line, and you have Actual Proof the way it is on the record.
Listen, you're the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing today. I'm just going to say that.
Oh, really? Oh, man.
Yeah, like I heard Headhunters in high school, and they changed my life. I'm not going to lie.
Like, really?
Straight up.
That really warms my heart to hear that, just to hear that music can have that kind of impact. You know, that's why the idea of like, how is music going to help bring people together? I mean, what you've said brings that idea home, because you said it changed your life, and there are many people that have a very similar kind of experience with music, and that's what I'm interested in promoting, and that's why this concept of STEM that's been talked about a lot. Science, technology, engineering, and math needs to have the A of the arts put in to make it STEAM. I mean, because that puts the heart into it. That puts the humanism into what essentially could be stiff. And by the way, the people that created the technological age, you know, people like Steve Jobs and like Larry Page and many others, including historical figures like Einstein, they were all involved with music. Larry Page, I think, played keyboards, and he said the influence of music on him is really what stimulated him to create Google. Einstein, I think, played violin. The guy who's head of the Juno project that I talked about and I have I'm involved with in some way, Scott Bolton, he also is a musician. And he said most of the scientists that he knows have either played an instrument, studied music, or music is a major component in their life. So if you don't have that component of music or certainly the arts involved with science, technology, engineering, and math, it's not going to be completely related to the foundation of this technological age.
We're going to wrap this interview up, and it has to do with your guitar player that you've now been playing for 10 years, Lionel Loueke, or more, the brilliant guitarist from Benin, also composer. And he had an amazing story when I talked to him about you, where every time you play Maiden Voyage solo in concert, he is absolutely terrified. This is a man that's not scared of anything. He's absolutely terrified to go back on stage because you changed the temperature in the room.
Is that what Lionel said?
That's what he said.
that's you know, so nice and kind of him to say. And it's different every night. I never try to play it the same. And the whole approach is very different every night. And it's not obviously Maiden Voyage every night either. You know, sometimes you have to later on realize, oh, this is Maiden Voyage. Because what I do to it varies so much from night to night.
Well, either if it's on a spacecraft or a boat or just walking down the street, I'm on that maiden voyage with you, Herbie. So thank you for joining us here.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
the songs you've never heard of, away from the books you've never heard
Herbie Hancock's Come Running to Me, recorded August 11, 2016 at Brick Celebrate Brooklyn. Herbie Hancock, the bandleader, piano, and on vocoder. Lena Lueke on guitar and vocals, James Genus bass. Terrace Martin on saxophone, keyboards, also vocoder. The double vocoder on Come Running to Me. And Trevor Lawrence Jr. on drums. And check out Herbie Hancock at the Beacon Theater in New York City tonight. The pianist also performs at the Newport Jazz Festival this weekend with special guest Thundercat. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us online, check out